Nadang Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayamudiriyet. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, we should offer our respectful obeisances unto Lord Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and to Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, and to Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and to Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and unto Srila Prabhupada, the translator, commentator, and our spiritual master. Nashtaprayesha bandreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavatyuttama shloke bhaktim bhavati naishtiki. By regular attendance in classes on Srimad Bhagavatam and by rendering devotional service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is destroyed almost to nil. And loving devotion to the Supreme Lord, who is glorified in the best of songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. On this 22nd day of May 2007, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 22, entitled Prithu Maharaja's Meeting with the Kumaras. Text number 27. Dagdashayo Mukta Samasta Tadguno Naivatmano Bahir Antar Vichashte Paratmanor Yad Vyabhadhanam Purastat Swapne Yata Purushas Tadvinashi Dagdashayo Mukta Samasta Tadguno Naivatmano Bahirantar Vichashte Paratmano yad vyavadhanam purastat Swapne yata purushas tadvinashi Dagdashayo mukta samasta tadguno Naivatmano bahiranta vichashti Paratmano yad vyavadhanam purastat Swapne yata purushas tadvinashi Dagdhashayo mukta samasta tadguno Naivatmano bahirantar vichashti Paratmano yad vyavadhanam purastat Swapne yata purushas tadvinashi Dagdhashayo mukta samasta tadguno Naivatmano bahiranta vichashti Atmano yandavadhanam purastat Neyata purushas tadvinashi Naivatmano bahir anta vichashti Vabadhanam purastat Swapne yata purushas tadvinashi Dagdashayo mukta samasta tadguno Naivatmano bahir anta vichashti Vabadhanam purastat Ladies, Dagnasayo mukta samasta tanguno. Naivatmano bahit anta vichashti. Dasayo mukta samasta tan guno. Dasayo. All material desires being burned. Mukta, liberated. Samasta, all. Tadgunaha, qualities in connection with matter. Na, not. Eva, certainly. Atmanaha, the soul or the supersoul. Bahi, external. Antaha, internal. Vichashte, acting. Pada atmano. Of the supersoul. Yat. That. Vibhadhanam. Difference. Purastat. As it was in the beginning. Swapne. In dream. Yata. As. Purushaha. A person. Tat. That. Vinashe. Being finished. Translation. When a person becomes devoid of all material desires and liberated from all material qualities, he transcends distinctions between actions executed externally and internally. At that time, the difference between the soul and the supersoul, which was existing before self-realization, is annihilated. When a dream is over, there is no longer a distinction between the dream and the dreamer. Purport. As described by Srila Rupa Goswami, Anyabhilashita Shunyam, one must be devoid of all material desires. When a person becomes devoid of all material desires, there is no longer need for speculative knowledge or fruitive activities. In that condition, it is to be understood that one is free from the material body. The example is already given above. A coconut, which is dry, is loosened from its outward husk. This is the stage of liberation. As said in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.6, mukti, or liberation, means sorupena vyavastitihi, being situated in one's own constitutional position. All material desires are present as long as one is in the bodily concept of life. But when one realizes that he is an eternal servant of Krishna, his desires are no longer material. A devotee acts in this consciousness. In other words, when material desires in connection with the body are finished, one is actually liberated. When one is liberated from the material qualities, he does not do anything for his personal sense gratification. At that time, all activities performed by him are absolute. In the conditioned state, there are two kinds of activities. One acts on behalf of the body, and at the same time, he acts to become liberated. The devotee, when he is completely free from all material desires or all material qualities, transcends the duality of action for the body and the soul. Then the bodily concept of life is completely over. Therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami says, Iha yasya harir dasye karma nama nasagira nikalasup yavasthasu jivan mukta sauchyate. When one is completely fixed in the service of the Lord, he is a liberated person in any condition of life. He is called jivan mukta, liberated even within this body. In such a liberated condition, there is no distinction between actions for sense gratification and actions for liberation. When one is liberated from the desires of sense gratification, he has no longer to suffer the reactions of lamentation or illusion. Activities performed by the karmis and jnanis are subject to lamentation and illusion, but a self-realized liberated person acting only for the Supreme Personality of Godhead experiences none. This is the stage of oneness or merging into the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This means that the individual soul, while keeping his individuality, no longer has separate interests. He is fully in the service of the Lord, and he has nothing to do for his personal sense gratification. Therefore, he sees only the Supreme Personality of Godhead and not himself. His personal interest completely perishes. When a person comes out of a dream, the dream vanishes. While dreaming, a person may consider himself a king and see the royal paraphernalia, his soldiers, etc. But when the dream is over, he does not see anything beyond himself. Similarly, a liberated person understands that he is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, acting in accordance with the desire of the Supreme Lord, and as such, there is no distinction between himself and the Supreme Lord, although both of them retain their individuality. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam. This is the perfect conception of oneness in relation to the super soul and the soul. Om jnana tamaram dasya jnanandana shalakaya chukshur unmidatam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance to him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So, these teachings of the Kumaras to Maharaj Prithu, I always found them very conclusive and very attractive. I remember reading them back in 1973 before they were even published. I was proofreading this book back in Brooklyn. And these instructions just really entered my heart. And so you may remember Sanat Kumara began his instructions by explaining to King Prithu that you're very fortunate, you already have an attraction for glorifying the Supreme Lord. This is very rare. And this process of glorifying the Lord and hearing about him, as we have heard, is the prime process for transcending the bonds of the material energy and becoming attracted to Krishna. And this is the last verse of his describing kind of a gradual process of complete burning of this jiva kosha. Remember in the previous verse, he talked about the jiva kosham, which is the sheath around the soul of the subtle and the gross material bodies. And these have to be burned in the sense of purified. And this reminded me of the similar instruction in the Kapiladeva to his mother, right at the beginning of instructions. He has this verse, Jadiyat yashu yak kosham nirgrinam analoyata, that bhakti or devotional service dissolves the subtle body of the living entity without separate effort, just as fire in the stomach digests all that we eat. So Sanat Kumara also used this analogy of the fire, but here the fire in the stomach, but it comes naturally. It's not something that you have to think about. If everything is working nicely, you're healthy, and you eat some food, then automatically it's digested. So similarly, by the process of bhakti, without any extraneous effort, the subtle body, the gross and subtle body, are burned up in the sense of being purified and made spiritual. And then this surprising translation, this is one of these translations where, whoa, I got to read the purport. Because Prabhupada says here, the soul and the super soul, the difference between the soul and the super soul is annihilated. It sounds like Mayavad. It sounds like, oh, we're merging, right? And we may remember that the Kumaras were pure jnanis until they went to Vaikuntha and they had that interaction with Jaya and Vijaya, and then Narayan came and they underwent a change and they became bhaktas. But here there's this little tinge of, you know, this oneness. So, of course, oneness means here oneness of interest. There's no question they're speaking of bhakti here. But Prabhupada makes it clear that what's described here is the oneness of the interests of the soul and the super soul, or the soul and Krishna. So that there's no separate desire. In the process of sadhana bhakti, We have this dual path. We have our own interests, and we have the interests of Krishna and the spiritual master. So we're meant to gradually come to the point where our own separate interests are wither and die, as it were, where we don't have any separate interests from Krishna. That's called pure devotional service. Where we have the mood, just as Prabhupada a million times explained, of like the hand serving the body, or the finger serving the body, or a little piece of a machine working very nicely. It works nicely and it serves the whole body and it doesn't have any separate interest. If I want to drink some water, I pick it up and everything is working according to my will. There's no question of any separate interests of the hand or the ligaments or the muscles or anything. It's all working as one. And in that mood of working as one, we also prosper. The hand also is nourished. If you take some food, put it in the stomach, that famous analogy. Whereas if the hand is paralyzed, it causes trouble to the body. Then I have to think about it. Oh, it's not working, right? So similarly, we've become trouble for Krishna in the sense that we're not working according to his will. We're not working in that service attitude. And so therefore, we're put into this special place called the material world, where we can act in this dreamlike condition of having a separate identity or a separate interest from the Lord. And this dream, which is mentioned here, comes up again and again in the Bhagavatam, analogizing the material life to a dreamlike state. A dream really has no substance. It has no importance. Ultimately, when you wake up and you start your day, you may remember a little something from the dream, and it may be very interesting, but ultimately it doesn't have any importance for you. And you just go about your regular activity. So this whole material life ultimately is insignificant. It doesn't really have any import for us. But because we take it seriously, therefore we're trapped by the dream birth after birth after birth. So this is also how we come into the material world. And if you forgive me, I'm going to read another verse here. This is a very important verse for understanding how the living entity starts dreaming and how he takes up this dream in the first place. Of course, this issue has been debated back and forth for a long time, but this is one of the verses that are seminal in describing this issue, and this is from the second canto, ninth chapter, text 2. So Maharaj Parikshit, he asked a whole bunch of questions, which will then serve the basis for the rest of the Bhagavatam. And now Shukadev is beginning to answer these questions. And his first question was, how does the living entity, who is ultimately pure, how does he become covered by this jiva kosha? And so now he's answering that, and he uses the dream analogy. Atmamayam rite rajan. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, O king, unless one is influenced by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no meaning to the relationship of the pure soul in pure consciousness with the material body. That relationship is just like a dreamer's seeing his own body working. And I'm going to read this purport. It's a couple of paragraphs. Bear with me. Maharaj Parikshit's question as to how a living entity began his material life, although he is apart from this material body and mind, is perfectly answered. The spirit soul is distinct from the material conception of his life, but he is absorbed in such a material conception because of being influenced by the external energy of the Lord called Atma Maya. This has already been explained in the first canto in connection with Vyasadeva's realization of the Lord and his external energy. The external energy is controlled by the Lord, and the living entities are controlled by the external energy, by the will of the Lord. Therefore, although the living entity is purely conscious in his pure state, he is subordinate to the will of the Lord in being influenced by the external energy. In the Gita 15:15, also the same thing is confirmed. The Lord is present within the heart of every living entity, and all the living entity's consciousness and forgetfulness are influenced by the Lord. So everything is under the control of Krishna. We want to forget him. He's giving us that forgetfulness. Matdaksmati agyanam apohanamcha, he says at 15:15. So it's all being controlled by Krishna. And if we want to get out of the dream, he'll also give us that facility. Now, the next question automatically made will be why the Lord influences the living entity to such consciousness and forgetfulness. The answer is that the Lord clearly wishes that every living entity be in his pure consciousness as a part and parcel of the Lord and thus be engaged in the loving service of the Lord as he is constitutionally made. But because the living entity is partially independent also, he may not be willing to serve the Lord, but may try to become as independent as the Lord is. All the non-devotee living entities are desirous of becoming equally as powerful as the Lord, although they are not fit to become so. The living entities are illusioned by the will of the Lord because they wanted to become like him. Like a person who thinks of becoming a king without possessing the necessary qualification, when the living entity desires to become the Lord himself, he is put in a condition of dreaming that he is a king. Sometimes this is compared, Prabhupada gives the analogy, it's in the text of the Bhagavatam, to children playing. Children will play, they'll dress up as a king, and they'll be the subjects, and they'll have fights and everything. And in the heat of the play, they'll actually think that they're king. Isn't it? They'll think, oh, I'm the king, and he's my subject, right? Until the mother comes and drags him back, and, you know, it's time to take a bath and go to bed, right? So we're in the same state. We're so absorbed in this charade of being whatever we are in this lifetime. We have millions of different identities that we forget the real identity. And then, you know, the death comes, drags us from the stage. Oh, what happened? You know, now you have to take a new identity. It goes on like that perpetually until we wake up from the dream. So, he is put into this condition that he is the king. Therefore, the first sinful will, now this is the key sentence here. The first sinful will of the living entity is to become the Lord, and the consequent will of the Lord is that the living entity forget his factual life and thus dream of the land of utopia where he may become one like the Lord. So it's not that Maya reaches into the transcendental world and covers us, Mahamaya. We have that independence where we can will separate from the Lord. Under just, you know, by our own free will. And so that's the first, Prabhupada calls it the sinful will. And then Krishna, or Maya under the instruction of Krishna, covers us and pulls us down and we start the dreaming business. Okay. So, similarly, let's see. Therefore, the first sinful will and land of utopia. The child cries to have the moon from the mother. And the mother gives the child a mirror to satisfy the crying and disturbing child with the influence of the moon, reflection of the moon. Similarly, the crying child of the Lord is given over to the reflection, the material world, to lord it over as karmi and to give this up in frustration to become one with the Lord. Both these stages are dreaming illusion only. There is no necessity of tracing out the history of when the living entity desired this, but the fact is, and that as soon as he desired it, he was put under the control of the Lord, of Atmamaya, by the direction of the Lord. And then one more thing, just to refer to the Crow and Tal letter. This is also as conclusive as Prabhupada's purports. And Prabhupada explains here that we never had any occasion when we were separate from Krishna. So we're with Krishna now, but we're just not conscious of him. As everyone knows, Krishna is everywhere. He's in our heart. He's external. Right? He's everywhere. But we have drawn the shades on our eyes. Maya Jabani Kachanam, Kunti prays. That we have the, covered by this curtain of Maya, which we ourselves have drawn by our will, by our desire, over our vision. We can't see what's really there. So Krishna consciousness, the process is really waking up, as we say, Om Jnana Tamaran Lasya Jnana Shalakya, the spiritual master, through the impartation of knowledge and the methods of Krishna consciousness, chiefly the chanting of the holy name, gives us the means by which we can open the eyes to the reality and come out of the blindness of ignorance, which is what we chant every morning. So this little bit of this letter here. Just like one man is dreaming and he forgets himself, in dream he creates himself in different forms. Now I am the king, just discussing like that. This creation of himself is as seer and subject matter, or seen too, things. But as soon as the dream is over, the seen disappears, but the seer remains. Now he is in his original position. And here we have this theme that came up in the verse, how the distinction disappears. In the sense that you identify fully with the desires and the emotions of Krishna. And this is our total meditation. We don't have any separate desires. So the seen and the seer become one in that sense. That's the idea. Our separation from Krishna is like that. We dream this body and so many relationships with other things. First, the attachment comes to enjoy sense gratification. Even with Krishna, desire for sense gratification is there. There is a dormant attitude. for forgetting Krishna and creating an atmosphere for enjoying independently. Just like at the edge of the beach. So this is the Tathasta Shakti. Just like as soon as we sleep, dream is there. We cannot say, therefore, that we are not with Krishna. As soon as we try to become Lord, immediately we are covered by Maya. Formerly, we were with Krishna in his lila or sport. But this covering of Maya may be very, 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 very long duration. Therefore, many creations are coming and going. Due to this long period, it's sometimes said that we are ever conditioned. So, back to our instruction from the Bhagavatam. Now, why is it that we are so persistent in maintaining this dream? Because, as Prabhupada says, it's very, very, very long duration. And the jiva kosha, the subtle body and the gross body, they're very deep. Very deep. Especially the subtle body. The influence of the subtle body. So even though we may be absorbed in Krishna at one point in our devotional life, and we're practicing, if we allow ourselves to wander, you know, the mind to wander, and we become slack in our devotion, or we commit offenses, then we start to become absorbed again in the material energy. This will be explained in a few verses, in this really wonderful verse in purport Prabhupada has, this coming up in a week or so. And that is that the consciousness is originally pure. It's just like this pure water. And even though one may want to be Krishna conscious, Prabhupada says in the purport, if you allow the mind to contemplate sense gratification, then it's just like reeds on the bank of a pool will suck up that original consciousness. And the thoughts of sense gratification will take over the mind. And as we know from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I think Prabhupada mentions it in the purport here, that the very chanting and the spiritual activities that you're doing will feed the desire for the certain kind of sense gratification. Because you're raising the energy, the Ladini Shakti. This is why, you know, Krishna consciousness is so wonderful, because even from the beginning, as soon as you chant Hare Krishna, you're experiencing some pleasure in Krishna consciousness. So, but if we maintain, just like we say, that's the 10th offense, to maintain material attachments, even after understanding so many instructions, then that material attachment can also be fed by the energy that you're giving into your spiritual life. So this is the twofold process that we have, is becoming attached to Krishna through all the ways of chanting and the deity worship and the prasadam. Because I was thinking, what's the basic demand of the body? We're talking about the jiva kosha, so the material body. Well, eating. Right? Eating is so basic. To live in this world, you have to eat. Well, how can you turn eating into a spiritual act? The whole idea in this verse is that every act, every breath, every thought is saturated with Krishna consciousness. Means this is for Krishna. This is for the spiritual master. It's not for me separately. I don't have any separate interests. Well, how do you do that with eating? That seems like, well, I got to eat. That's what prasadam is all about. You turn it into a sacrament by offering the food to Krishna, it with love and devotion, preparing it with love and devotion, honoring it with love and devotion. Then it becomes an exchange of love rather than just feeding the demands of the gross body, you know, which is part of that jiva kosha. So, and the same thing can be there for sex. Dharma vadudho bhuteshu. If one's motive is to raise nice children, you're doing it under instructions and rules and regulations, then it becomes a sacrament. Everything becomes spiritualized in that way. So that's the whole meaning of this verse. But it's a struggle, because from time immemorial, we've cultivated these deep-rooted desires. And therefore, the process is progressive renunciation. If you look at the different ashrams, it's progressive renunciation. You know, brahmachari, grahastha, but the nirvana process, sannyas. The idea is to diminish the involvement with the senses and to maximize the absorption in Krishna consciousness. It's very simple. And here the Kumaras, now they're speaking to Maharaj Prithu. As they said at the beginning, he's already realized, you know, but he's asking these questions for the benefit of everyone else. So the king, you know, naturally has so much involvement in the material world. That's why Lord Chaitanya didn't even want to look like he was involved with the king. So he avoided Maharaj Prataparudra, at least externally. So, each of us has our own involvement, our own, you know, whatever householders, brahmachari, sannyasis, whatever. But we all have some involvement in the material energy. So these instructions are applicable for all. is that he's speaking basically about hearing as the most powerful process. Because as Madhusevan Prabhu was saying so nicely yesterday, that somehow or other we have to become attracted, you know, to the spiritual master. To the spiritual master. And through the spiritual master, the Krishna. And that, what does that attraction do? Just like we say, you didn't quote this, but we sing every morning, Shri Guru Charane Rati Ese Uttama Gati. That attraction for the lotus feet of the spiritual master is the best means of advancement. Now, why is that? Because what do we know of Krishna? Krishna is so remote, so subtle, we cannot perceive him, but we can perceive the spiritual master. So when we get a little attraction, then we become more receptive to the message. The whole idea is we have to have that open heart, that submissive oral reception. That word shushushro, which comes in right at the beginning of the Bhagavatam. Dharmak projita kaita volta padamone matsaranam satam, vedyam vastava matra vastu chivadam tapatreon mulanam, shivan bhagavate mahamanuk kate, king vaparai ishara saddo didn't have a dude today to kutabi shushushubis tachanat. So this Bhagavatam is special, right? It's free of any tinge of material motivation. Dharmak projita. There's all kinds of religions that are saturated with material motivation. But not this Bhagavatam. This Purana is the Amala Purana. Amala means pure of what? Of any material tinge. There's no material motive here. So it was written by Vyasadeva in his maturity, and it uproots the threefold miseries. It's understood by the pure souls, and it says that what need is there of any other scripture? You know, even hearing it with that submissive oral reception, the Lord will be manifest in the heart, and one will become self-realized, God-realized. So the Bhagavatam is filled with descriptions of the Lord, his incarnations, the process of devotion, devotees. Here we see these are great devotees, the Kumaras. They have their own sampradaya. And this interaction and this conversation should enter our hearts. And what does it do? This is the key, the intelligence. By hearing these instructions and associating with Prabhupada through his purports in a submissive receptive way, then it should change the way in which we think about ourselves and the way in which we want to act in this world. The whole idea is that we have to change our thinking, our feeling, and our willing. So the thinking and feeling and willing in the materialist are completely absorbed in the material body and the subtle mind. So as soon as we come in contact with the pure devotee and this transcendental sound, then the thinking changes. That's the first thing. The thinking, we get different ideas, right? It's basically a totally radical, revolutionary idea that everything that we've thought is important and is good in this world is wrong. It's all right. Everything you think is wrong because it's all based on a false platform, the bodily concept of life. So this is very revolutionary. If we act on that understanding, begin chanting and associating and so forth, then we start to practice bhajana kriya. We start to practice of purification. But it can be a very long haul, depending on our willing, how we are willing according to that thinking. Because after all, whatever we do, we have to will. And when you will something, it's on the basis of some desire, of some philosophy or some idea, isn't it? And so when we are doing more and more of our activities on the basis of what we know is right and what is the instructions of Bhagavatam and the other Shastra, then we will be burning away this jiva kosha. And this our separate interest, our separatist, which is defined as our separateness from the Lord, will gradually diminish until at one point, Srila Prabhupada showed the perfect life. Whatever he did, he's picking up a phone, he's walking, he's doing anything. It's all obviously in Krishna consciousness means this is for Krishna. It's an act of love for Krishna. When every breath is an act of love for Krishna. You can imagine how blissful that is. I like to think as you're chanting Hare Krishna, what are we actually doing? We're praying, right? We're praying for the Lord to engage us in his service, to bring us closer, to give us the strength, the spiritual strength and the inspiration to serve him more and more and come out of this material world. It's a prayer. So What does that word Hare mean? That's Radharani, we know. And Radharani is personified love for Krishna. Radha, Krishna, Pranaya, Vikriti. This is explained in the fourth chapter of the Adi Lila. So that means that when we chant, we are becoming absorbed in love for Krishna. In other words, we should, at least mentally, we should be hearing that and understanding what that means. So that is the ultimate goal. We may not be able to stay on that plane. If we can hear and we can understand what the Hare Krishna mantra is, it is that call to the Lord, and it is a meditation on this perfect loving exchange between Krishna's internal energy and his pleasure potency in the form of Radharani and Krishna. So disassociating with that, when you think of something, that thing that you're thinking enters into you in a subtle way. This is why we're so enjoined, and it was explained by Kumara here, Son of Kumara, to avoid the material association. As soon as you're in association materialist, immediately forgetfulness of Krishna is there, and the thoughts and the ideas and the desires and the aspirations of the materialist, they enter into your heart. Again, you're dirtying up that subtle body. So maintaining that connection with Krishna through chanting the holy name and all the other vibrations and our activities we do will keep us on the spiritual platform, and ultimately the goal here is given to separate or eradicate, rather, the difference between our desires and the desires of the Supreme Lord. And when that is there, and at every moment, from every waking moment, we're acting simply for the desires of Krishna, then that's the stage of purity. And we understand it's a stage of great bliss as well. At the end of this, the instructions here, he will chant this wonderful verse. Yat pada pungita palasa balasa bhaktya karma sayango dita mudgita yanti santa tadvanna rikta matayo yatayo piruddha sroro ganastamadanam vatavasa devam. This jiva kosha is sometimes described as knots. There's these knots in the heart. You know? So here he says, tad pada pungita palasa balasa bhaktya, that the devotees, they experience this vilas, this spiritual pleasure that comes from serving the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord. And that cuts off or cuts asunder the knots in this heart. The santas, the devotees. Others cannot do that. The jnanis, the yogis, what to speak of the karmis. Eventually, even if they may be detached for some time due to the force of their austerity, they're not uprooted in the desire, and they eventually get swept away by the waves of desire. And we've seen in the Shastra in so many ways. So we are actually the biggest sense gratifiers. But we understand how to do it in such a way that there's no poisonous reaction. That went over the internet. Oh, my God. But we do it through Krishna's senses. If we're always thinking of Krishna's sense gratification, that's prema. That's prema. And we find that our senses, being linked up to, we're part and parcel of Krishna, we also experience wonderful pleasure in through the medium of that devotional service. And it doesn't come to an end. It can just increase, unlimited forever. That's actually how to enjoy in this world. So we're not against enjoyment, but we're against enjoyment that has a poisonous reaction that simply produces misery. Just like I was thinking, how does knowledge affect us? You know, knowledge is so important. This Bhagavatam class is so essential. Just think about it. You know, the famous sweet rice analogy, right? Okay, we're sitting down to a feast. You know, it's the Sringa's appearance. You fasted all day, or Janmashtami, you fasted all day and half the night. You know, and it's time to take a nice feast, break fast. So no one has to be reminded twice. You know, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, it's almost 12. And so you sit down and sweet rice is there. And suddenly, everyone's about ready to drink this wonderful sweet rice, and then somebody comes in from the kitchen. No! There's sand in it! Or even worse, there's arsenic in it or something, you know? Suddenly, that knowledge, you don't have any desire for it anymore. Boom! It's cut off, isn't it? So similarly, so much of the Bhagavatam is filled with this reminding us how this material pleasure is filled with the, you know, pain. Which is, it's just a, you know, momentary maya sukaya, and then there's so much suffering that comes with it. So let's learn how to really enjoy in this world. you know, kirtan, preaching, anyone who's, you know, involved in book distribution, you know, they become addicted. Isn't it? There's an addiction there. We have to become addicted. Either we're going to be addicted to material so-called pleasures and suffer the reactions, or we're going to be addicted to Krishna. Which one is it going to be? You know? So someone who's intelligent knows, oh, let's become addicted to Krishna. But just like an addict, there's a withdrawal period, and that's different. But once we become healthy and fully addicted to Krishna, then there's no end to the transcendental ananda. Okay, I'll end on that note. Can we have a few questions, Swastri?
Yes,
okay. Anyone have any questions? And at the end, I have a little poem for you. Go ahead. Pancharatna Prabhu. Yeah, we have the mic. There you go.
Being heard on the internet, by the way, so.
Uh-oh. Hare Krishna. This idea of our desire and Krishna's desire becoming one is, I had a thought and I wanted to ask your to respond, because it seems that this is another aspect of this oneness and difference. Desire is all we have. To be independent, to be individual, means to have individual desire. So it, my understanding, and I'd like you to comment, is that the oneness of desire is not a elimination of desire in the jiva, but it is a harmonization of desire, that the jiva remains independently desirous, but his desire and Krishna's desire become harmonized. And I wanted to ask.
Yeah, that's a good. That's a very good point. We are individuals and we have individual desire, but just like you have, you know, in the conditioned state, there are so many things that we do, right? Even as you grow up, your desire changes. I give this example. Forgive me, I'm not so good with this. But I remember when I was like 8 or 9, you know, many of us went through this, had to have a bicycle, right? At a certain point, the desire for a bicycle becomes very strong. And eventually I got the bicycle, you know, and I rode around for a few years, you know, and eventually I grew out of that, you know. I didn't need the bicycle. And that bicycle just went, and it's, you know, it gathered dust in the basement. But that isn't that I became free of desire. It was replaced by other material desires. You know, at a certain point, the desire for the, you know, involvement with the opposite sex comes up, and that's a whole big thing, you know, something new, and then it goes on. So, but this always has the basis of the ego. It's all based on me and mine. So within the context of that basic, principle, there's unlimited desires, right? Similarly, in the spiritual realm, within the basis of pleasing Krishna, there's unlimited ways to do it. And we know the basic varieties of dasya, sakya, vatsalya, madhurya, ras. So these are different living entities who had different desires, ways they wanted to please Krishna. And even within that, we know, you know, there are different kinds of sakyas, there's different friends, there's different kinds of parental relationships. There's so much variety. And so, but it's all on that basis, basic foundation of being pleasing to Krishna. And Krishna is pleased with all this variety. As it's said in, again in that fourth chapter, with all, you know, these gopis, they all represent different varieties of ways of pleasing Krishna, enhancing his conjugal mood and so forth. And this is endless. So it's true that the living entity has his independence and his uniqueness in how he desires. It's not annihilated. But it's within that whole context of how it's pleasing the Krishna. And Krishna reciprocates. He also finds all kinds of ways in which he, you know, delights his servants, giving them ways of serving him and so forth. And it's just a, you know, a wonderful, real utopia, you know, paradise in the spiritual world of these exchanges of love. So just like a parent, you know, loves a child and does everything for the child, but at a certain point, you know, they're working and so forth, but they think, oh, I'm going to raise a child, we're putting away money for the college and all these different things. So the focus is on, you know, raising the children and so forth. That's a basic principle of their desire. So as similarly, within that context of pleasing Krishna, there's unlimited desires, but the desire isn't different. It's all, you know, what he wants also. Yes, Prabhu. Oh, the mic. It's coming behind you. Go ahead.
You know, thank you for a wonderful class.
Hare Krishna.
I'm just kind of wondering, you know, we know, even if you're not a devotee, you know that you should try to, you know, perform some kind of austerity to acquire a goal or to hear or to, you know, to perform some sacrifice. It's like you said, mother and child, parent.
Right.
What is this thing that that we have such a difficult time developing a desire to hear about a Krishna consciousness? What is that, you know, I mean, why is it that we're so adverse to it? Why don't we want to hear? And why don't we want to really try to develop? Why is it that we become so inimical towards it practically? Or we just kind of like cut it off and we don't want to hear?
Well, like I said, this conditioning goes very deep. And, you know, the mind, the material mind, you know, working with Maya is very devious. And so, you know, one of the things we warned about right at the beginning of the Upadeshamrita is the Niyamagraha, you know, in the sense of kind of going through the motions. Or I was reading recently another reason, meaning of this Niyamagraha, because Niyamagraha can mean just neglecting the principles, the regulations. But the other meaning is just going through the motions without really paying attention by rote, or doing so for some material gain. Now, this is what happens with religion in general. Why are there so many religions? Why is there Kaitava Dharma? Why is this all of... Because, you know, in one sense, there's this impetus toward religion. The soul wants to be good. He wants to be close to God. He wants to be safe. You know, all of these things. But at the same time, there's this strong bodily, you know, mental pull for me and mine and enjoying. So, okay, we'll have best of both worlds. We'll have our religion and we'll have our, you know, material things. So you have, like, some churches where it's not just a question of being prosperous, but flaunting the prosperity, you know, a ostentatious consumption to show that you really got the mercy of Jesus, right? You're rich and the poor, you know, they bad karma, right? So, I mean, it's total distortion, but the people think they're religious, you know? So the same thing can happen in our religion, you know, with Krishna consciousness. It's right explained, right in Kapiladeva. The you know, bhakti mixed in the mode of passion. In other words, you're going through the motions, but basically, okay, Khan is there, you know, put in the dollar, you know, the $1, only $1, into the handi, you know, and then, you know, please, you know, give me this, give me that, you know, let's say, cover your bases. In the evening, we go to another, you know, the Ganesh temple, whatever, just cover the bases. You know. This is Kanishta, right? It's Kanishta. So that's not going to help us because you're using religion for the material purposes. You're trying to use it. You can't cheat Krishna ultimately because then you get another body. You know, you have to stay in the material world. So even amongst devotees who are, you know, trying to be serious, the mind is also up. Okay, you want to sit in class? Fine. Go ahead and sit in class. But I got you. You know, you're thinking about this, thinking about that. And if you try to concentrate, I'll put you to sleep. You know, I do not want to hear that, no more sense gratification. I do not want to hear that. You know, this is what the mind is doing, you know. Isn't it? Or, okay, you're going to be in the class the night before, you'll do all kinds of stuff, stay up late, eat a lot. There's no way you can stay asleep, you know, no way you can hear the next morning. So there's all these strategies of Maya, because you kind of, Prabhupada says, you're challenging Maya, she's going to fight back. So part of her strategy is to, you know, the stuff we read about in the Upadeshamrita. You know, the Imagraha, Janasangas, associating with the materialists, talking nonsense. All of that dilutes our attention on Krishna. And then, you know, we may be doing our duties after that, but we got all these material desires. What am I doing here? I'm not getting paid, you know. Maybe I can go out and get a job. You know, the idea may come. You may not act on it right away. But, you know, this is all, you know, dross. So that's why there's so many rules and regulations to try to restrict the, you know, the mind. It's all a mind. to keep the mind focused so that actually when it comes time to have kirtan, you know, you're just completely absorbed in the holy. It's time to chant japa. Your mind is peaceful. You know, you got enough sleep. You know, you're ready to chant and just absorb yourself in the mind and let the purification take place. So it's a science. And we can go backwards as well as forwards. You know, we're on the path, but we may also be moving backward on the path. You know, we're trying. So that's why, you know, all of this other stuff that Sanat Kumara talked about, you know, the nectar of, you know, hearing and solving the subtle body is there, but it's also talked about giving up association with non-devotees, da-da-da-da-da. So we can't think that we can keep cutting corners and we're going to actually progress. We're going to, you know, find ourselves treading water, and we'll be lucky if we don't go underwater. You know, so we have to become serious. As you get older, you realize, well, you know, it's up to you. You know, there's no assurance. There's absolutely no assurance that we're all going to go back to God in one lifetime. You know, it depends on purity and sincerity and effort. Okay, is it time for my little poem? Okay. This is a little poem I wrote a few years ago when I was in Russia. There's a beautiful, that's Girdhar Hari looking at you. There's Shyamasundara in Vrindavan. It's a meditation on Krishna. So this is based on the Madhurashtaka from Vallabhacharya, which is just, you know, a simple little poem. And Adodam, Madodam, Vadanam, Madodam, Nayanam, Madodam, everything is sweet, sweet, sweet. It's called the Emperor of Sweetness. So I took off on that, and you can also add, it's open source, like Linux, you know, or Linux, whatever. His lips are sweet, his smile is sweet, his lotus eyes and face are sweet, his heart is sweet, his name is sweet, the king of sweet is sweet complete, the king of sweet is sweet complete. His glossy curly locks are sweet, his sidelong dancing glance is sweet, his eyebrows playful gestures sweet, the king of sweet is sweet complete. His voice is sweet, his words are sweet, his tinkling ankle bells are sweet, his flute song and his laughter sweet, the king of sweet is sweet complete. His lotus feet and hands are sweet, his waist and lotus navel sweet, his threefold bending pose is sweet, the king of sweet is sweet complete. His jaunty peacock plume is sweet, his forest flower garland sweet, his gunja berry necklace sweet, the king of sweet is sweet complete. His jewel ornaments are sweet, his garments and his fragrance sweet. His flute horn and staff are sweet, the king of sweet is sweet complete. His cows and coward friends are sweet, his Giri Govardhan is sweet, his dear Yamuna River sweet, the king of sweet is sweet complete. His forest wanderings are sweet, his foot dust and his gait are sweet. His dancing and his joy are sweet, the king of sweet is sweet complete. His mimicry of birds is sweet, his wordplay and his songs are sweet. His daily forest picnics sweet. The king of sweet is sweet complete. His jokes and playful pranks are sweet. His generosity is sweet. His love for his companions sweet. The king of sweet is sweet complete. His moonlit autumn night is sweet. His calling all the gopis sweet. His blessed rasa dance is sweet. The king of sweet is sweet complete. His secret rendezvous is sweet. His dalliance with Radha sweet. Her love for him completely sweet, or supremely sweet. The king of sweet is sweet complete. My humble hymn is no great feat, yet still I pray that it may meet with favor from the king of sweet, so he'll reveal his lotus feet. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Thank you, Guru, for the nice class.
Hare Krishna.
Sweet class, you're right.
Do I get some sweets?
Some sweets for the king of sweets. For the servant of the king of sweets.
Hare Krishna. I hope that wasn't out of bounds.
No, that was...
I think it'll be okay. Yeah.